Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info.
We begin this evening. Our thoughts are with the wonderful people who have just come through the wrath of Hurricane Laura. We are delivering life-saving therapies and will produce a vaccine before the end of the year, or maybe even sooner. We will defeat the virus, end the pandemic, and emerge stronger than ever before.
All right, that was the president, part of his speech, the final speech, wrapping up the RNC, doing it from the White House, the South Lawn, with 1,000 people on hand to watch the president. So the race is now at the point where we are less than 70 days before our next election. Will Donald Trump continue to be the president and inhabit 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, or will it be Joe in the basement, as he's been called by the Republicans? Rudy Giuliani took that mantle over as he spoke to the crowd, and that's exactly what he said, that or he spoke rather at the convention on the final night, and he said Joe is in the basement. Clearly he is not the guy leading this nation, not the guy to lead us forward. But the president talked about, besides the virus, talked about other things that went well, he said, in his administration, and talked about what would happen if there was a very big change with the way American life is. Would it be destroyed versus preserving American life? That kind of was, I think, the overall theme of his speech. That's what it felt like to me. So he formally accepted the Republican nomination from the South Lawn of the White House. Hi, everybody. Kate Delaney, thank you so much for spending some time with me. We'll also talk about Laura and Lake Charles just being smashed to smithereens in some cases. So many people without power in areas of Texas and Louisiana, but there are other areas that dodged it this time around because it could have been much worse for a few areas. But don't tell that to the people who caught this head on, because, boy, it's scary when you look at it. I saw somebody today say, when they tell you mandatory evacuation and to get out, you need to get out. They didn't get out, and they survived, but they said it was the worst thing ever that they had experienced in their lives. The president was trying to make it the best thing that anyone had experienced from the crowd perspective that were there to watch him. So as I said, he blamed the former vice president and his Democratic Party for the socioeconomic problems that we're having, the unrest, all of that in the country, and said again and again that it's the most important election in the history of our country. It'll decide whether we save the American dream or whether we allow a socialist agenda to demolish our cherished destiny. And he said a few times, your vote will decide whether we protect law-abiding Americans or whether we give free rein to violent anarchists, agitators, and criminals who threaten our citizens. This election will decide whether we'll defend the American way of life or whether we will allow a radical movement to completely dismantle and destroy it. So again, this capped off the sort of quasi-hybrid, if you will, virtual Republican National Convention that was delivered from the White House. And he spoke on a red carpeted stage with American flags, bookended by campaign signage from the White House's grand portico and illuminated against the night sky. I mean, it was a beautiful backdrop, of course. It was a 70-minute speech. It was probably one of the longest acceptance speeches in history. I kept thinking, there were moments when he stopped and it looked like, oh, okay, that's the crescendo and that makes sense. But it was 70 minutes long. And then at the end of it, fireworks that exploded over the mall and it spelled out the president's name, Trump. So he punctuated, like I said, that Joe Biden is not the savior of America's soul. He's the destroyer of America's jobs. And if given the chance, he will be the destroyer of American greatness. And that was part of the theme, American greatness. That was the theme for the final night. So he used that to be kind of one of the final gut punches, I guess, to Joe Biden. And he talked about that the last 4 years have been spent reversing the damage Joe Biden inflicted over the last 47 years. And he said his record is a shameful roll call of the most catastrophic betrayals and blunders in our lifetime. He spent his career on the wrong side of the law. Now, one of the things that is interesting is, you know, what happened to Jacob Blake, the 29-year-old black man in Kenosha, Wisconsin, which there's no two ways about it. You look at that video, there's more to the story, but you look at the video and seven shots in the back. I mean, it's, you know, this is just going to reignite these mass protests. And it did, and it led to an unprecedented boycott by pro athletes in protests of racial injustice. So this speech comes while all of that, of course, is happening in Wisconsin. And Laura and the remnants of that are going on because people overnight got slammed with that hurricane that luckily dissipated before it went even further inland and caused more damage. So it was a very strange 24 hours, I think. And one of the things that the president said, our nation and the entire planet has been struck by a new and powerful invisible enemy. And like those brave Americans before us, we're meeting this challenge. We're delivering life-saving therapies. We'll produce a vaccine. You heard that at the top. The promise of the vaccine before the end of the year or maybe sooner, defeating the virus and the pandemic and emerge stronger than ever. Well, of course, if you are a Republican strategist, that's exactly what you're looking to deliver here, because this is the answer people want to hear, that this we're going to have this vaccine. And if the vaccine came sooner rather than later, that, of course, would help the president because of the economic crippling effect it's had on so many people. And then, of course, the loss of lives, too, as well. No surprise, just like last week with the Republicans, the Democrats counter back mostly through Twitter. That would be Senator Kamala Harris and, of course, Joe Biden, where they went after what the president said with the pandemic, especially, and even race relations, too. One of the things that Harris said is that she said the president's catastrophic mismanagement of the virus and the fact that he's demonstrated reckless disregard for the well-being of the American people by failing to take the coronavirus more seriously in January and February instead of rising to meet the most difficult moment of his presidency. Donald Trump froze is what Kamala Harris said. He was scared and he was petty and vindictive, and that was on social media. And then the same thing from Joe Biden. He also countered back on the way the virus was handled and then, of course, what's happening with race relations in the United States. All right, we've just scratched the surface. Kate Delaney, glad to have you on board once again. Remember, you can always send me your thoughts at kate@katedelaneyradio.com. To the numbers we head next.
Attention radio listeners, have you ever wanted to be independent of the utility companies and actually generate your own supply of off-grid electrical power? If so, this is going to be the most important message you'll ever hear. Here's why. A limited number of solar-powered backup generators are back in stock and now available. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving electrical power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, a solar generator runs quietly, emits no fumes, and produces an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. It's like having an electric power plant running silently, secretly, in your own home. Run sump pumps, shortwave radios, computers, even keep food from spoiling. Go to mysolarbackup.com to learn more. That's mysolarbackup.com. Supplies are still limited and are available on a first-come, first-served basis only. MySolarBackup.com.
When you have a pain in the neck, a real pain in the neck, back, shoulder, or legs, you now have two convenient choices to get fast relief without taking another pill. Because now, Sunny Bay heating wraps and pillows are available at both Amazon and Walmart. Yes, see Sunny Bay's 4.5 to 5-star customer reviews on Amazon.com or Walmart.com. Our made in the USA, microwavable heat wraps, heatable neck pillows, and extra large body wraps are designed better for perfect support where and when you need it. Even while driving, Sunny Bay wraps will not burn and stay balanced to provide soothing hot or cold therapy to help treat temporary or chronic pain. And the best part? Sunny Bay quality products start at under $20. Join thousands of happy customers and see why Sunny Bay products have a lifetime 100% positive rating on both Amazon and Etsy. It's easy. Click Amazon or Walmart and search today for Sunny Bay.
As the coronavirus crisis continues, I've said it before, I'll say it again, now's not the time to retreat, panic, or stress out. Instead, refocus, reimagine, and reinvent. In my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary, the whole focus is on overcoming adversity. I share the secrets of some of the most accomplished people on the planet and how it applies to you. I agree with George Eliot, who famously said, it's never too late to be who you might have been. Pick up a copy of my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, on Amazon.com.
DrinkSuperTea.com. Powdy Arco Tea helps regenerate new cells. Everything from the cells in our skin to the cells in our organs so they function properly. Great for healthy people and can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a disease. A one-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit DrinkSuperTea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's 818-965-9113.
We start with sharks. Yes, sharks. Not the political kind, the kind in the water in Fiji. A U.S. Coast Guard crew, they hadn't been off the boat in 4 weeks, decided they would have a little fun, and they would swim. They were swimming when suddenly, here's your number, a 6 to 8 foot shark was spotted heading their way. I mean, this sucker looked big. I've looked at this tape a couple of different times, this video, and what do you do when you see this? Well, of course, what you do when you've got 40 members of the crew swimming, you shoot. You shoot at the shark, and that's exactly what a petty officer did from the boat. Let's just shoot the bloody thing. Let's kill it. And then all of a sudden, poof, no more shark. And honestly, you could see there was so much splashing going on, and it was scary to look at the fin of it, and you could see how it was coming closer. Well, that's, you got to eliminate the threat. What are you going to do? Eliminate the threat, and boy, they got out of that water fast. Oh, I mean, really quickly. Here, give me your arm. Okay. I mean, they practically swam up the side of the boat, so it was very crazy to see that. I thought I would add a little levity there. Nobody got hurt. Nobody was injured. So in the end, it turned out fine. All right, let's move to something else. This is disconcerting, right? Disconcerting. That on some of these campuses like Iowa, North Dakota, Kansas, and Indiana, you've had new cases that are falling down in the last couple of weeks. So But at the same time, you've got 7,600 confirmed coronavirus cases on college campuses. And why is that? Because even though they're told, don't gather in a big group, it's almost like the second you say don't, it's like a kid when they don't understand, it's hot, don't touch the stove, and their hand bursts. Listen, just don't do it. And they've got this backlog, right, of tests. And you have the college campuses where there are parties that are going on, and the parties are causing some of the problems. It's going to be interesting to watch throughout the whole year to see how the college campuses tackle it. Because I think it's the hardest place. Well, we know it's so many younger people. Of course they do. They feel invincible. It's an elusive monster that we're dealing with here, right? And in dealing with it, you have to keep wrapping your mind around the idea that, oh, that's right, yes, we're in COVID-19 land. There's that possibility. It's just very hard to understand. So storms come and go, but when you see the systems, like I'm going to talk about this in a second, the horrificness of Laura, because there's numbers there, but you have over 100 million in the U.S. facing the threat of severe weather. So I'm not talking about what just happened. I'm talking about New York City, Newark, Hartford, Connecticut. You're listening to us. You're under a level 3 to 5 risk. Philly, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Detroit, Rhode Island, Providence, etc. And what kind of storm are we talking about? We're talking about a storm of wind and hail and possible wind shear kind of storms. A tornado watch, Louisiana, like they need that. Arkansas, Mississippi, tornadoes, boom. And Laura produced 2 tornadoes, but they're saying even more is possible. So we'll see what happens with this severe threat. But there was no question that the huge winds, the 150-mile-an-hour winds that were predicted, ripped roofs off, shattered buildings in Lake Charles and parts of Texas along the coastline, too. And there was no stopping the freight train known as Laura. I mean, there was no stopping it. Everywhere you looked, you see destruction, destruction, destruction. I saw a boat. This is the craziest thing. There was a boat that was unmoored. That was a showboat, like, you know, one that would be one of those giant big paddle boats that would take a lot of tourists and stuff. Poof! Just totally crashed into the side of a bridge. And you look at some of the overall buildings in Cameron, Louisiana. Oh, I feel you. Boy, just underwater in so many of those areas. And you knew that this was the possibility, and certainly you saw that by that waterfront where dockside things were sunk and certainly homes were ruined. 6 people died in this storm, by the way, through various means. And it's sad. And Lake Charles knew it, too. And the closer to the water, the more damage there seemed to be. I mean, at least houses with complete loss of the roof and what's underneath. And some of the houses were on stilts. And, of course, that makes a big difference, but they still got slammed. And there were very few, and there were some, but there were very few intact in many, many, many of the areas. So there's going to be a lot of rebuilding that's going to be happening. There was one house where the roof didn't get ripped off, but you saw maybe 25 giant trees that slapped into it. So it looked like you were building a house, like a Legoland house, and you just threw a whole bunch of trees on it. And that was the effect of Laura. Power outage to over 800,000 people. Things flipped over, tossed about like they never even existed. And people losing at least a shingle or two. Airport ripped up. planes scattered about. So, you know, again, trying to pull apart that damage, that's going to be some damage. I saw a guy standing out in the back of his house. You could see his eyes are just filled up. And in his pool was half of his roof. Then there were others where it was as if it was a can opener. And you looked in and you just saw, boom, it's ripped open again. So the damage is going to be at a crazy high number. I'm certain of it. But because it looked like hundreds of tornadoes went through the Lake Charles area. But it'll be about rebuilding. It'll be about just getting back to the business of living and figuring out how to do that. 17-year-old charged in the Kenosha shootings considered himself militia. Kyle Rittenhouse, who was charged, had social media posts that talked about that. And he shot three people, two of them fatally, during the protest. And court records show Rittenhouse faces a first-degree intentional homicide charge in Kenosha County. So he was, as of midday on Wednesday, jailed in Illinois. He'll appear for that extradition hearing on Friday. Boy, oh boy. You see the video. Somebody had some video of him beforehand, and he looks like such a young kid. And you wonder, wow, how does that, how does that happen? And the National Guard certainly was rallied out in Kenosha, still is out there because you've got this 8 p.m. curfew and trying to make sure that that's enforced so it doesn't ignite a slew of more problems. It was day two of a protest for the NBA. No NBA games to be had because the players didn't want to play them. They're looking at what happened in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and saying enough is enough and we're not going to do it with the way the black man is being treated. So will we see more sports go down? Of course, there's always that possibility. Lute Olson dies at the age of 85. This classy guy. When I was a kid journalist, I had a chance to interview him, and he coached for 34 seasons at Division I Long Beach State, Iowa, and Arizona from 1973 until his retirement in 2008. He was absolutely one of the most successful college hoop basketball coaches. He had an overall record of 776 wins and 285 losses. And he tied for the most NCAA tournament appearances as a coach, 28, and fourth in NCAA tourney wins, 46. How about that? You remember every time you were doing the brackets, you always looked at, oh, they're going to be there again. Oh, they're going to be there again. Arizona, because he was such an X factor as to how well they did. All right, stay with us. We're going to talk about the homeless situation and what you can do to help from a woman who knows all about it from Skid Row in L.A. and what she did. And then also, boarding pass. What's it like to sit next to strangers and wonder? Stay with us.
Have you ever thought about turning your Glock, XD family, or 1911 handgun into a semi-automatic carbine? It only takes about 30 seconds. The MechTech Carbine Upper is classified as an accessory and can be delivered right to your doorstep with no FFL or background check required. It's the world's most versatile pistol accessory. Build your custom upper today. Simply go to handgunconversion.com. That's handgunconversion.com.
Do you want to give you and your loved ones premium nutrition right now? Hi, I'm Jamil Bookaboo from TeamGaday.com and the GCN Longevity Health Team. Get your premium nutrition formulated by world-renowned naturopathic doctor, Dr. Joel Wallach at wholesale, or also become a distributor and earn income while supporting this broadcast. Go to TeamGaday.com via the shopping cart or contact form, and I'll get back to you with support personally. That's TeamGaday.com with Longevity. TeamGaday.com.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
USA Radio News with John Hunt.
President Donald Trump spoke at the Republican convention accepting the nomination for president.
My fellow Americans, tonight with a heart full of gratitude and boundless optimism, I profoundly accept this nomination for President of the United States.
And the President also invited Democrats, independents, and anyone else who wanted to join his campaign.
The Republican Party, the party of Abraham Lincoln, goes forward united, determined, and ready to welcome millions of Democrats, independents, and anyone who believes in the greatness of America and the righteous heart of the American people.
In his acceptance speech, the President spoke on Second Amendment rights, school choice, law and order, bringing troops home, and freedom of speech. This is USA Radio News. The President is headed to Louisiana and Texas to look over the storm damage, and USA's Tim Berg has details.
We got a little bit lucky. It was very big. It was very powerful, but it passed quickly.
President Trump speaking there at FEMA headquarters. The President says he is being kept up to date on damages from Hurricane Laura, which has been downgraded to a tropical storm. The President continues.
We'll probably be going on Saturday or Sunday, and we'll be heading to Texas and Louisiana, and maybe an additional stop.
The President also saying the federal response will be very aggressive.
Millions of laid-off Americans could now start to receive $300 a week plus $100 from their state in a boost of their weekly unemployment benefits. So far, 34 states have been approved to offer sweetened federal unemployment aid created August 8th when President Trump signed the executive order allocating $44 billion in funding from the Disaster Relief Fund to cover the benefit. This is USA Radio News.
Today, many of us are paying attention to our health, and what we eat plays an important role. But so often, the water we drink is a mere afterthought when it should be a primary part of our daily nutrition. Real Water would like to change how you think about the water you drink and how it can play an important role in helping your body restore balance and reach its full potential. The key benefits of every bottle of Real Water are stabilized negative ions, balanced pH, detoxification, and it hydrates you like never before. And yes, it tastes great. Real Water is beyond alkalinity, and due to its proprietary process called E2 technology, it's the only drinking water on the market that can maintain a stable negative ionization, which means real science in every bottle. Order your Real Water today and take advantage of special pricing for this audience only by calling 1-855-REALWTR or visiting buyrealwaternow.com. That's 1-855-REALWTR or buyrealwaternow.com. Order now. 1-855-REALWTR or buyrealwaternow.com.
I've talked about on the show many times the homeless problem that we have in the United States, but more importantly, understanding the individual, that part of it, the individual and what they're going through, and how do you relate. And there's so many wonderful organizations, but I think a lot of times that rope that people are trying to hand out, somehow it doesn't get it right there into the hands because there's a miscommunication or something that isn't understood. So somebody who is unlocking so much of that has written a brilliant book. It's called Helping the Homeless. And her name is Tina Babcock. She joins us now. Tina, thanks so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
So you've had an interesting life yourself. You were a radio personality, a TV producer, a waitress, a social worker, a store clerk, and then, of course, an advocate for battered women and children, which I think is so important, too. And then it leads you down this road of helping the homeless, and where you had a job as an executive director of the Ann Douglas Center. So tell us what that was like.
Well, it was really an interesting experience. I actually loved it. But I was recruited. I really never thought I would see myself working in what's called a rescue mission. And in fact, I didn't really even understand what they were when I was first recruited. I had just finished getting a bachelor's degree in psychology. I was doing a work in a church. I was doing marriage groups and counseling. And one of the congregants said, oh, there's this job you should apply for. It mixes your psychology and your ministry experience as a chaplain with the Los Angeles Mission. And I thought of the rescue missions as being smelly, dirty places. It wasn't. too interested, but I prayed about it, and I really felt like I needed to, you know, just kind of walk through the door and see what happened. And so that launched me into a decade of working in the heart of Skid Row, Los Angeles, with the homeless. And I learned so much from the people that I worked with and the people that came for services, changed a lot of my thinking. I come from a very traditional, conservative background. People sometimes assume I'm a liberal just because I work with the homeless.
Right.
But it was extremely rewarding, and I had to learn to give up a lot of preconceived ideas.
So that's exactly what's so powerful, that what we talked about, what I said, I feel like that's where the miscommunication comes in, because there you are. I mean, you're in the heart of L.A. Skid Row. How do you relate to those people? How do you really help those people and give them the kind of right responses? And you learned all of that, didn't you?
I did. I learned my background. One of the advantages I had was I had been what they call a Navy brat. My dad was a career military guy in the Navy, and I moved around a lot, and I met people in all different states in the United States, and, you know, we're diverse as Americans, and I learned in that process to just meet people where they are and try to be accepting and see them person to person. And that crosses cultural boundaries, language boundaries, ethnic boundaries. You know, a person is a person is a person is a person.
Right.
And so being a white woman in a predominantly Black and Hispanic group of employees and people receiving services, they had a lot of preconceptions about me as well. And so you only dispel those by exposure, by being around somebody over a period of time. And we had an interesting group that came and volunteered with the Andover Center. We had a 27-bed residential program where women lived with us for a year. And so during that year, they were pretty much confined to the mission. They worked in the mission. So they had their birthdays there. They had any kind of recreational things, you know, happen there. And so we brought volunteers in. We brought in a group of women from Bel Air Presbyterian Church. If anybody knows Bel Air, it is, you know, one of the wealthiest communities in the country. And the congregants, you know, many of them were very, very wealthy people. And they got recruited to come in and help volunteer, and they would just come for bingo. And I was amazed at how transformative it was, both for the women who came to play bingo with the women that were in residence and the women that were in residence. And what happened was the preconceived ideas went away when they played a game together. They were just people together having fun. And the women who were trying to rebuild their lives and had so much shame and so just felt so cast off by society had these people that they had kind of put up on a pedestal, found out they were just people too. And the acceptance that was exchanged between the two changed both parties in fabulous ways. I had the pastor of the women's group for that church, which was a huge church, said that her women's group had been transformed by the experience of just volunteering. And they didn't bring food. They didn't, you know, clothes. They did later. They volunteered lots of ways. But initially, they just played bingo. So there's lots of ways to impact somebody who's trying to recover from something that is so demoralizing. They have a lot of self-doubt and sometimes self-hatred that has to be eliminated.
Yeah, so I think, you know, there's no doubt that this would be a great, just for anyone to read, but certainly a valuable resource for any rescue missions, anybody dealing with the homeless population whatsoever. What do you hope people take away from reading your book, Helping the Homeless, which we should say you can get on Amazon.com under Chaplain T.M. Babcock? What do you hope they take away from it?
That homelessness is a broad category. It is a large group of people with diverse needs, and there isn't one fix one size fits all. And if you're really going to make a difference, you need to become informed, because you can make it worse instead of better. So I want people to realize that your part might be to help somebody who an organization that's equipped to discern what the needs are. And also, if everybody who's listening to this program can stop falling into a trap of dehumanizing people that they perceive as homeless. Almost all of us know somebody who is or has been or is a candidate to become homeless, and we don't even know it. They're just people who need help, and the kind of help they need changes. It's different for different people. So it might be mental illness, it might be an addiction, it might be domestic violence, it might be they're just displaced because of a natural disaster. Their house burned down. They got older and all their living relatives have died already and they don't have that safety net. It's complex, but seeing them as people, and they're not safe. And they're not villains. They're the gamut of society.
Wow. I like the way you said that. They're the gamut of society. That's the hashtag for sure. And you're absolutely right to you know, remember that everybody's people and they fall into different circumstances. So for you, it has to be rewarding that you were able to help people. When you know somebody gets back on their feet or something changes and you hear of that, how does that make you feel?
Oh, it's awesome. I have a lot of people that still keep in touch with me via Facebook, and I see at different events. And to see the growth and the healing keep going, and I get to see them over many, many years, and they become the advocates, too, and they become people that step in and help others. And that to see that multiplied is just so very exciting.
Yeah, I bet. Hey, one last quick one. So I mentioned that you were the executive director of the Ann Douglas Center. I've heard wonderful things about Ann Douglas. She was a very giving, wonderful person. Is that true?
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things she understood that was very important is that environment speaks volumes to how you value a person. So the Ann Douglas Center was the cleanest, the most beautiful place. It was run like Ann always said, I want a place that I'm comfortable being in. And so she made sure that, we had the resources to make the place beautiful and that the clean floors and the fresh paint and those sorts of things make a person feel valued. And it really, elevates their desire to do better, to embrace the change. The worst thing, the reason I thought rescue missions were dirty is I saw some that were. And a lot of people think someone who's homeless, well, they should just be grateful they got a roof over their head. But how would you feel
right.
if you went into a place that was dirty and had roaches and, you know... Many of the people that are on the street and stay on the streets instead of going into shelters or temporary housing, they'll tell you sometimes, well, I'm not one of those people.
Right.
Or that they're scared to be around those people.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of our veterans that are out there. They won't go into a place like that because they're not one of them.
Yeah. Yep, that's a great lesson. Absolutely. We got to fly. This was a great interview. Tina Babcock, you can learn from this. Helping the homeless. Pick it up on Amazon.com. Thank you.
Thank you, Kate.
Drinks.
supertea.com. Powdy Arco tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. A one-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's 818-965-9113.
As the coronavirus crisis continues, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Now's not the time to retreat, panic, or stress out. Instead, refocus, reimagine, and reinvent. In my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary, the whole focus is on overcoming adversity. I share the secrets of some of the most accomplished people on the planet and how it applies to you. I agree with George Eliot, who famously said, "It's never too late to be who you might have been." Pick up a copy of my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, on Amazon.com.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
Now, with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nano-colloidal silver now at ImmuneSupportNow.com. That's ImmuneSupportNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Hard. As somebody who travels so much, as you all know, taking this show to different places, whether it's Ireland or Grenada or wherever, traveling is part of my life. And there's something about the boarding pass and getting the boarding pass. So wait till you meet our next guests. We've got Betty Gossel and Karen Pickens. They wrote three books, but they wrote a book that we're going to talk about called The Boarding Pass. So ladies, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us.
So I want to tell everyone, too, Betty's a mom and Karen's her daughter, and they ended up doing this together. And I had this great off-air conversation with Betty about this. So, Betty, let's start with you. What made you decide you were going to write this first book?
About 10 years ago, I had been on a job interview on the East Coast that had not really gone very well, and I was changing planes in Atlanta on my way back to the Midwest, and I found the boarding pass of the woman who had been in the seat on the flight before mine. And I remember thinking about her life and wondering what it was like and where she was going. And then I looked around the plane at the other passengers and started imagining stories about them. And a couple years later, Karen and I were talking about it, and we thought, you know what, that'd be a cool idea for a book. So it just kind of sprang from that.
And then, Karen, you get involved, and how did that work out? How did you break up the book? Did you do some chapters, right? That's what happened, and your mom did the others?
Yeah, we decided on doing 8 different characters that all sat in the same seat on the same day. And so she took 4 characters and I took 4. And we each kind of put our own spin on those people and went from there. It was really interesting.
So what was it like doing the book with your mom?
It was really great. The outlining part and the brainstorming part was really easy. I think our minds work very similarly. I actually kind of expected it to be a little more difficult in the writing piece because our writing styles are very different. She has a very professional writing background and a very, you know, concise and to the point. And I'm more of a creative writer, so I tend to, you know, be more flowery and flowy with my words and stuff. So when we actually wrote our pieces, you know, mine would be 3 times as long as hers, and so we'd have to kind of meet in the middle, and I'd have to scale back a little bit, and she'd have to flesh hers out a little bit, but it was really an interesting process, like, trying to get on the same page there.
Yeah, Betty, so you just heard that. Was that fun for you? Because I have to tell you, my mother was had the proper style. The whole thing was an English lit major, taught English, all of that. And I don't know if we could have done that together, but you worked it out. So you just had to sort of let that go, right?
Well, like she said, we did meet in the middle. We have a joke that she would describe the sunset and or a sunrise with these golden streaks were shooting across the morning sky, and I would say, yeah, the sun came up. But we did meet in the middle. I got a little better at it. And the other interesting thing was we write very differently. I write in longhand on I take a legal pad and sit out on my deck or in a corner booth at IHOP, and that's how I write. Where she writes
and I almost
on her
exclusively, phone. Yeah, with my thumbs on my phone. That's how I do mine. So
wow.
Very different.
Wow, very different, obviously. So, Betty, this comes together, and then you decide, hey, you know, we've got something here, and your friends just scoop it up, don't they?
Right. Originally, we were going to do 50 books for friends and family, and that was going to be it. And then it kind of snowballed into a couple hundred. And our family and friends and other people are like, no, we need more. We need more. So we decided to write a sequel, and we thought that that would be it. And then, but people were really invested in our 8 characters, wanting to know what happened to them after they got off the airplane. So we ended up doing a 3rd book to tie up all the loose ends and to, you know, neaten it up a little bit.
I love it. So for you, Karen, you said it. You have these 8 characters, and people, as your mom said, wanted to see, oh, gosh, what happens, so they get super, super invested in this. Did you get invested in this? Who was your favorite character? You have to have a favorite.
I was definitely surprised at how invested people got in them. I expected the 1st book to be the only book and that we would kind of leave it open-ended for people to make their own endings. But as we ended up writing a 2nd and 3rd book, I did become very attached to the character of Kristen, who I won't spoil too much about her, but she has a life that starts off very different from mine, but actually comes to mirror mine quite a bit in the end. So
yeah,
that was a surprise for me that she became so much like me. So.
Yeah, there you go. So Betty, for you, I know that you traveled a lot, and you said that. And when you were in healthcare, you were traveling all the time. So you really understand the business of getting on a plane, of boarding, of doing the things that happen when you're in an airport. Did you? hard. As somebody who travels so much, as you all know, taking this show to different places, whether it's Ireland or Grenada or wherever, traveling is part of my life. And there's something about the boarding pass and getting the boarding pass. So wait till you meet our next guests. We've got Betty Gossel and Karen Pickens. They wrote three books, but they wrote a book that we're going to talk about called The Boarding Pass. So ladies, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us.
So I want to tell everyone, too, Betty's a mom and Karen's her daughter, and they ended up doing this together. And I had this great off-air conversation with Betty about this. So, Betty, let's start with you. What made you decide you were going to write this first book?
About 10 years ago, I had been on a job interview on the East Coast that had not really gone very well. And I was changing planes in Atlanta on my way back to the Midwest, and I found the boarding pass of the woman who had been in the seat on the flight before mine. And I remember thinking about her life and wondering what it was like and where she was going. And then I looked around the plane at the other passengers and started imagining stories about them. And a couple years later, Karen and I were talking about it, and we thought, you know what, that'd be a cool idea for a book. So it just kind of sprang from that.
And then, Karen, you get involved, and how did that work out? How did you break up the book? Did you do some chapters, right? That's what happened, and your mom did the others?
Yeah, we decided on doing 8 different characters that all sat in the same seat on the same day. And so she took 4 characters, and I took 4, and we each kind of put our own spin on those people and went from there. It was really interesting.
So what was it like doing the book with your mom?
It was really great. The outlining part and the brainstorming part was really easy. I think our minds work very similarly. I actually kind of expected it to be a little more difficult in the writing piece because our writing styles are very different. She has a very professional writing background and is very, you know, concise and to the point. And I'm more of a creative writer, so I tend to, you know, be more flowery and flowy with my words and stuff. So when we actually wrote our pieces, you know, mine would be 3 times as long as hers, and so we'd have to kind of meet in the middle, and I'd have to scale back a little bit, and she'd have to flesh hers out a little bit. But it was really an interesting process, like trying to get on the same page there.
Yeah, Betty, so you just heard that. Was that fun for you? Because I have to tell you, my mother was had the proper style. The whole thing was an English lit major, taught English, all of that. And I don't know if we could have done that together, but you worked it out. So you just had to sort of let that go, right?
Well, like she said, we did meet in the middle. We have a joke that she would describe the sunset or a sunrise with these golden streaks were shooting across the morning sky, and I would say, yeah, the sun came up. But we did meet in the middle. I got a little better at it. And the other interesting thing was we write very differently. I write in longhand I take a legal pad and sit out on my deck or in a corner booth at IHOP, and that's how I write. Where she
and I almost exclusively, yeah, with my thumbs on my phone. That's how I do mine. So,
wow.
There you go.
As the coronavirus crisis continues, I've said it before, I'll say it again, now's not the time to retreat, panic, or stress out. Instead, refocus, reimagine, and reinvent. In my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary, the whole focus is on overcoming adversity. I share the secrets of some of the most accomplished people on the planet and how it applies to you. I agree with George Eliot, who famously said, it's never too late to be who you might have been. Pick up a copy of my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, on Amazon.com.
DrinkSuperTea.com. Powdy Arco Tea builds red corpuscles in our blood, which carries oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate. Our immune system needs oxygen to develop. And cancer dies in oxygen. A 1-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit DrinkSuperTea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's 818-965-9113.